Well, a few years ago, there was an atheist ad campaign, and it started in England, I think mostly on buses, but I believe it's made its way here to Canada as well. And the main motto for this ad campaign was, "There's probably no God. Now stop worrying and enjoy your life." And probably you're not surprised to hear, as a priest, I have some disagreements with that line, and they have two main issues that I have. And the first issue I have with it is it's just very, very privileged. Now, I imagine this bus driving by someone who is fighting drug addiction, or someone who is on their way to see their sick child in the hospital, or someone who's just lost their job. "Oh, there's probably no God. Now stop worrying and enjoy your life." It's the kind of saying that would only appeal to someone who's had a very comfortable life, I think I would say. And a second issue I have with it is there's an unspoken assumption behind it. And what I mean by that is if the saying assumes that not believing in God means we can stop worrying and enjoy our lives, then what is belief in God like? Well, it assumes at least that belief in God means we worry and we don't enjoy our lives. And I think we've all who've come to believe in God found that to be very untrue. But there is one thing I do appreciate from this saying. What I do appreciate from it is the acknowledgement of doubt. Because you notice it doesn't say, "There's definitely no God, now stop worrying," but "There's probably no God." So this atheist ad campaign, I don't know if they weren't quite sure about wanting to be that definite, but there's that probably in there. And as we have today in our readings, this encounter with poor doubting Thomas, this may be a bit of common ground. Because doubt, in a sense, is almost the flip side of faith. And that's not just my own idea. This actually comes from Cardinal Ratzinger. So before he was Pope Benedict, Cardinal Ratzinger, and he wrote a book called Introduction to Christianity. And then there, he actually describes doubt as a bit of a bridge between belief and non-belief. And he describes it like this. "The person of faith," he says, and this is the quote, "the person of faith," he says, "must be aware of the insecurity of his own faith, the oppressive power of unbelief in the midst of his own will to believe." And as an example, he looks to St. Therese, who faced a lot of doubts at the end of her life in the midst of her faith. We also, as a more modern example, could look to Mother Teresa as well, if we know what happened with her in her life. And even in these readings today, we see some doubt in the midst of faith. And first from St. Peter, the first letter of Peter, we have this encouragement to hold on to faith as we suffer various trials. And of course, if we never faced doubt, if his congregation never faced doubt, there would be no need to encourage steadfast faith. Or there in the gospel as well, of course, we have doubting Thomas, gets all the pressure on him being called doubting Thomas. But all of the disciples, their first response was not to believe the resurrection. And even when Jesus appears to them, why would Jesus say, "Peace be with you," so many times as he does in this gospel? Well, he wouldn't say it because they were all living in perfect and contented faith. But Jesus gave them that peace because they needed it. Because in the midst of their faith, they were facing fear, worry, doubt. So Christian doubt with faith, is a very real thing. And even as we believe that God is trustworthy, there still could be a doubt even in ourselves. And there's a couple ways we can see this. One of them is I may doubt my ability to know what's true about God. Because we can say that questions about God, about death, about existence, they're too big for our brains, even though our soul keeps on asking them. And even if I do my best to learn, if I accept the teachings of the church, do I know that I'm understanding them right? Am I grasping them? There's always a mystery there. There's always a level of unknown still, something we can't quite get our minds around. And a second kind of doubt that we can have in the midst of faith is doubting my ability to follow God, my ability to do what he asks of me, to know what he wants me to do even. And one time I faced this myself, this doubt and faith together. It was some years ago, before I was ordained, I worked for one summer as a chaplain at University Hospital. And I was assigned to one medical ward in particular, and also to pediatrics, and especially the pediatric intensive care unit. I spent a lot of time there. And I had met a man up on the medical floor who was palliative, which is the state in life where the healthcare will manage the person's symptoms, but we know that they're coming to the end of their life. The person is dying. And he was mostly non-responsive. He didn't really say much. He didn't really do very much. Except if he heard prayers, he would pray along. And that happens a lot, actually, at the end of people's lives. When not much can get a response out of them, when they hear prayers, they will pray along. And so as I got to know this man, I got to know this about him, I would start my day by visiting him, and we would pray together one decade of the rosary. And then I would spend the time doing my visits on this medical floor, and then it would go down to pediatrics. But one day I was with this man, and I was praying the decade of the rosary, and about halfway through the decade, I had this deep sense within myself, go to pediatrics now. And I said, well, no, I can't do that. I've got plans. I got people to see up on this floor. I'm going to go there later. But as we kept on praying, it kept on being there, go now, go to pediatrics now. And so after the rosary, I went down to the pediatric ward. And I can tell you, even as I walked into the ward, I walked in with a lot of questions, even maybe some doubt. And I did completely believe that God could have spoken to me there and sent me in there. But I also knew it could have just been me. And I thought the only way I can know for sure is just to go. And so I went in, and I can't give the whole story here. It's not really my story to tell, but I can say that it was the right place for me to be. And there were needs there that I was able to help fulfill. So there was doubt and there was faith intermixed together. And it is possible to have complete trust in God and to be skeptical of myself. And there is a mix of doubt and faith together. So back then to Ratzinger Pope Benedict, he says it like this. Just as the believer knows himself to be constantly threatened by unbelief, which he must experience as a continual temptation, for the unbeliever, faith remains a temptation and a threat to his apparently permanently closed world. Anyone who makes up his mind to evade the uncertainty of belief will have to experience the uncertainty of unbelief, which can never fully eliminate for certain the possibility that belief may, after all, be the truth. So he's saying there, either there is the uncertainty of belief or is the uncertainty of unbelief. There's probably no God, then maybe we're not quite sure. And at this point, a person may object and say, well, wait a minute, that is the Pope making claims about unbelievers, but what does he really know? But I share a couple of these examples with you. And these come from a book called Talking God. And it's by a New York Times writer named Gary Cutting, who interviewed a bunch of theistic philosophers who believe in God and atheist philosophers who don't. And one thing that surprised me as I read this book was really the openness of the atheist philosophers to the possibility of God. Even though they don't accept his existence, there is more openness there than I expected to find. And one, for example, of these is Louise Anthony, and she's a professor of philosophy at the University of Massachusetts. And after she explains why she doesn't believe in God, she goes on to say this. That's not to say that I think everything is within the scope of human knowledge. Surely there are things not dreamt of in our philosophy. And she goes on to say that in her judgment, the evidence tilts against God. That's how she phrases it. But tilts against is not certainty. And there's some openness there. Or another one is Michael Ruse, and he's a philosopher of science at Florida State University. And he says it like this, and he is an atheist, but he does also say this. I don't think that science as such can explain everything. If you want God to have a crack at it, go ahead. So he hasn't gone that way to having God have a crack at it, as he puts it, but he sees why people might. So there's a bit of that doubt maybe on both sides. So in light of this then, what is Christian faith? And to describe that, I just want to close by looking at the example of someone who recently came to the Catholic faith, and this is J.D. Vance. And you may have heard of him, J.D. Vance. He is an American author, and his family is from the American South, but he grew up in Ohio in sort of the Rust Belt of America, and he graduated from Yale Law. And in America, you're probably aware that there's a sharp divide there between what they might call the coastal elites on the one hand and then the real America or flyover country on the other. And it's a cultural divide, it's a political divide, it's a religious divide to a certain extent. And J.D. Vance has lived in both worlds. And he wrote a book called Hillbilly Elegy, really trying to bridge that divide. And the book became a bestseller. Ron Howard is making a movie that's going to be out on Netflix about it. But he was raised in an unchurched Christian home, by which he means that his grandma believed in Jesus, loved Jesus, but she didn't like churches very much. So he grew up with that. But as he grew up and as he went to Yale, he declared himself to be an atheist. And he was baptized Catholic just last year. And at the beginning of this month, he put out an article describing his conversion. And I've linked to it in the description underneath the video. You could read that after if you want. Just give a quick summary here. But in this article, he describes a real intellectual and moral journey that he goes on. And he found that his non-church Christian upbringing is not quite enough. And he's also found that his elite atheism at Yale is not quite enough. So on this journey, he says, slowly, I began to see Catholicism. And he came to see it like this. This is how he describes it. Obsessed with virtue, but cognizant of the fact that virtue is formed in the context of a broader community. Sympathetic with the meek and poor of the world, without treating them primarily as victims. Protective of children and families, and with the things necessary to ensure they thrive. And above all, a faith centered around a Christ who demands perfection of us, even as he loves unconditionally and forgives easily. And I think what that whole journey there explains quite well is two ways that Christian faith comes to us, two ways that we come to believe without seeing. And the first way we can come to believe is that Christianity itself helps us see. And as we see that the Christian faith can answer questions that nothing else can answer. It can fill needs that nothing else fills. And it sheds light on some of the most intimate and important experiences we can ever have, like nothing else can. So we come to see this, and we can say that even if I can't see this God, the God who shows me this, a God who offers me this kind of truth, is a God I can put my faith in. So Christianity helps us see. And a second way that we come to believe, to Christian faith, really comes from 1 Peter. 1 Peter says, without seeing, you love. So it's not just about believing without seeing, but it's loving without seeing as well. And that's the last words that Vance gave in that quote that I gave, a God who loves unconditionally and forgives easily. So the second way that we have to faith is we believe because we love. And that's to say, we come to know, we experience the love of God that we cannot see. And then we say to ourselves, well, even if I can't see this God, a God who loves me like this is a God I can put my faith in.